A veteran songwriter, musician and humanitarian whose new album Once Was a Hawk, Now I'm a Dove is due for release so soon. Joby, how are you? Thank you for coming on to Phoenix FM.
Well, look, all the pleasure is mine, Joe, I have to say. I was really excited to get on the show, and the fact that it's going out there in Essex, it's a bit of a thrill for me. It's a county I love very, very much. I've toured England, Scotland, Wales so many times, and I've fond memories of that part of the world. And lots of friends are also. So, you know, I was kind of, I was very excited to be on your show today. So the pleasure's all mine.
Ah, well, I was a little bit worried you might not be able to understand my accent, but I think we're all right now.
Well, there's no problem there at all. I lived in London for 10 years during the 80s, early 90s. And, you know, it's an accent that I'm really, really used to. And yeah. I love it. And I often slip into that accent, you know, I do a bit of Cockney rhyming and all over the years, like, you know, and it's just slipped into my personality, if you know what I mean. So that's what happens when
totally.
You live in certain places, you pick certain things up.
Absolutely. So listen, should we start from the beginning? It will be nice. There's so much to get through. I could literally talk to you for hours already, and we've only just started. Because you actually started out in the 80s, didn't you, with bands such as like Bank Robbers, then Energy Orchard, and that had like, you had a 5-album deal with like MCA, the record company. That was a big deal back in the day.
It was a big deal, and I got into music. It started off in Belfast in the punk scene, and was on a program called The Tube, which is sort of early kind of Jules Holland type sort of setup. And from there, I got signed to EMI Records, moved to London, and had a couple of years at EMI, and done pretty well. And for several other reasons, just things fell apart with the Bank Robbers. Then I joined a band called Energy Orchard, which were our old roadies, would you believe it? The road crew from the Bank Robbers. I formed a band and ended up in that band. And we went on, as you say, to get a 5-album deal with MCA Records. And it was like, it was one of the best deals that anybody had ever got to date, you know, so to that date. So, and we were, you know, we'd done the album. It was called very unpretentious. It was just called Energy Orchard. And there was no thought in that, was there? It wasn't a massive what I call it, leap of thought. Like, yeah, so we, you know, we had 2 or 3 years of pretty crazy times, touring Europe, America, Canada, England, Scotland, Wales. And as a matter of fact, Joe, we were saying to the managing director of MCA, which was, there was no politics. He was the main guy, you know, the full might of the company got behind us, but also the wanted us out in America too. And over there, MCA wanted us over there. So the truth of the matter is the war is out, really. And, you know, throw in a bit of alcohol and drugs. And I was just completely, completely exhausted by the end of it. And as a matter of fact, I ended up in a clinic, a complete classic kind of rock and roll casualty.
What age was you then, Joby, though? Sorry, what age was you then?
No, you're grand. I would have been about 27.
Right, yeah.
That old age. I mean, at one point I was one of, was it going to make it past 27?
Goodness me. You could have gone down history with some of the others, to be fair, at 27. Goodness me, that's an age, isn't it? Weird one, that.
It's really funny, isn't it? It's just that funny age. Yeah, I mean, I got through it. And in some ways, it was probably the best thing ever happened to me, you know, because I finally grew up. Because I think, to be honest, musicians are kind of Peter Pan figures, you know. They find it hard to grow up because they're in this world, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, it's there's no requirement to grow up, you know. But so I got through it, and You know, I was in Belfast. I had to go back to Belfast, which was one of the hardest things I've ever did in my life, is having to go back to the narrative of a conflict where I'd spent 10 glorious years in London, multicultural society, you know, traveling and getting around the place and enjoying my life. And then, as I say, you know, hit the wall and slid down it. And then I found myself back in Belfast again. And having to go back to that narrative, that conflict, was really, really difficult. I didn't clean up right away. You know, had a couple of kids. And, you know, tried to be a father, settled down and all the rest of it. I've done my best and I think I've done okay. And once the kids started, you know, getting up and roared a little bit, I never stopped music really. You know, it was always music was always there. I just started getting into writing again. I started feeling a lot of like social political notions in my head as an older person, having went through, you know, the mental illness and all the rest of it, and looking around the conflict in Ireland. And I just thought to myself, you know, I'm going to have to start writing about these things and using the medium of the songwriting, you know, the 3.5 minute, 4 minute folk pop song, if you like, and put some of these ideas that were going through my head into these songs. And it took me off on a journey. And my first album, my solo album, was called The End of the War. I knew when I was putting it together, it had sort of academic appeal too. You know, I was singing about the conflict and peace and reconciliation, basically. And I got picked up by, you know, lots of big organizations throughout the world that were asking me to come along and perform and all of that. So I've done that for a few years, and I started getting a wee bit corporate again. And I started panicking and going, no, it's not what I really want to do, you know. And
were you scared that you, at any point, even though you got the family, you've grown up, that you could go back to your old ways a little bit or not?
Oh, without a doubt.
Was that an element of it that it was always at the back of your mind, right?
Oh, it still is.
Yeah.
Still is.
Sure.
There's still, as I call it, there's still a Joby in there that wants to jump the perimeter.
There's two Jobys, right?
Yeah, there's definitely two Jobys, you know, but he's well curtailed. I used to think that I took him up the mountainside, made him dig his own grave, you know, every now and again.
He's clambered back out, has he?
You gotta watch that guy, you know, because he can definitely try to. You just have to watch it. I stopped drinking now, 22 years.
Wow.
I never went to AA or anything.
Oh, you didn't.
No. I have deep respect for AA, don't get me wrong, but it just wasn't for me. So I got back into the music and I cleaned up, and I really got deeply into the music where I started to actually understand, you know, how music worked. I recorded singles, albums. I had a single in the British charts called Belfast with Energy Orchard, and number one in Ireland. You know, people would say, oh, you know, you're a great songwriter and everything. But like, I only knew how to string a couple of chords together, you know, at that point, you know.
Yeah.
So I started to actually get into music itself and the theory of it. It brought me into a place where I just fell in love more deeper and deeper and deeper with the music itself and the power of a simple song. And I do come from that generation, like the Specials and people who would write about social political issues, but not kind of big political, you know, ramming ideas down your throat or anything like that. It's not like that. It's all pretty much, you know,
just a social conscience. I think that's what essentially that was. I think a lot of the kids actually that are writing now as well, like people in their late teens and 20s, have a social conscience, and you can sort of feel like there's always that wheel, isn't there? It comes back round. It's the same thing, right?
I totally agree with you. It's, you know, as you say, it goes off on a bit of a tangent. If you're around long enough, you realise that there, you know, there's people who are dead against, oh, it's just music, it's there for fun and all the rest of it. And I appreciate that, you know, and there's room for everything. But there should be, like, English tradition and Irish tradition, Welsh and Scottish, and all over the world, in fact, that folk aspect of music where, you know, people used that, as I say, folk tradition to tell stories and lament their lives, you know. Mm. I really just mean humanitarian, basically. I mean, it's not really political in that sense. And if it is, it's very much with the small p. It's more of the human condition and more singing from that point of view. We've got to remember that we're all fundamentally the same, and we all have more or less the same needs, you know.
And as you say, music is art and art is expression, so it's all connected. So, you know, and like you say, there's different ways of expressing everything. But I tell you what, Joby, I'm going to play two of your tracks. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to play now Falling. It's actually on the Phoenix FM A-list now, so I'm going to play that. We'll come back and actually talk more about your humanitarian work as well and your organisation that you helped to co-found. So I'm going to play Falling now, and then we'll come straight back. So that was Falling. At that song, it moved me. I'm going to come back and I want to talk about your humanitarian work in a minute, but I just want to talk about the single, because I'm just going to quote a couple of lines. Now, the breeze, it blows on the sea now. I can't go back to that pain. 1,000 voices in their water calling out their names. Falling into your arms is all I had to do. Now, I know immediately before reading anything about you exactly where you drew the inspiration from that. But could you enlighten us a little, please, Joby?
Well, thank you, Joe. And it's always good to hear that people are getting it, you know. And 8 years ago, when the Syrian war happened, and we've seen the terrible images which were unfolding in the media, young Alan Curry, for example, washed up on the beach, and it was terrible. It was really terrible. I was sitting in Belfast, and my son was 18 months, you know, years of age, and I looked at my partner and said, look, I'm going to have to go down there and see what I can do to help. It was the island of Lesbos. I went there thinking I'd be there for 2 weeks maybe and get this thing off my chest. And what unfolded in the 2 weeks ensured that I would never walk away from the situation unless it, of course, was resolved. It's pretty ongoing. So I decided, along with another artist, a friend of mine, Jude Bennett, that we would get a search and rescue teams down and get out onto the water with a vessel. And we started a campaign, and a great artist called Jake Chapman gave us £35,000 to get the boat. Our first search and rescue team came from England and came down and served with us. And from that, 8 years ago, there's been various search and rescue teams from all over the world, American SEALs and the Middle East, Australia, you name it. We maintain the boat as a charity. We're called Refugee Rescue. And we've rescued 18,000 people.
18,000?
18,000 people, yeah, out of the sea. You know, before your listeners think there, well, you know, are we assisting bringing people over, you know, and all that? We're not doing that. We see ourselves as the emergency services, regardless of the politics. We're not interested in the politics. We're a humanitarian organization. We only care about life. And if they're in the water, we'll come and we'll get you. And we don't care who you are. We will come and get you. We don't care how you got there. We'll put you on land. The chances is we operate in the Mediterranean now. The chances is that if once you go to Italy, you'll be impounded anyway, and you might be sent back or whatever. But our only aim is to ensure that you don't lose your life at sea. We're not political in any way, shape, or form.
Thank you for that, because that's. Yeah. How you can devote yourself to doing that is just like, you know, you hear these stories, but there's so many people that are trying to clamber on other people to gain platforms from themselves. And then there's altruistic people like you that are actually just there, as you say, there's no political agenda. It's just about people's lives, saving lives. You know, we only get one.
Exactly.
But we won't get political on this because it could go that way. But that is not what that's about. And a lot of people get those lines kind of blurred, don't they, Joby? And I think that's the problem.
You know, I have political views, certainly I do, but when it comes to life, you know, there's a line drawn there, you know what I mean? And I'm just a human being. I can't sit back and watch people, you know, drown in the water. It's just not right. And it's a great Anglo-Irish, initiative, you know, and I'm very, very proud of that. Very, very proud of that. Particularly the part of the world that I come from, you know, it's very heavily politically contested. And in fact, the new album is called I Once Was a Hawk, But Now I'm a Dove. And I grew up in the streets of Belfast, the British Army on the streets. And, you know, I grew up with pretty one-dimensional outlook. And at that time, I would have probably been a bit of a hawk, you know. And, you know, as the years rolled by, I've got great friends in the British Army now who were served in the British Army, even served over in Belfast on the streets. So the album is I Once Was a Hawk, Now I'm a Dove. It more or less is, you know, when you release an album, there's a great opportunity to make it, call it a name so it can create debate around subjects like that and the journey that people have taken in the north of Ireland. And we always hear the bad news, but the reality is so many people have reconciled with each other and recognized the humanity in each other. And so many people have, you know, put down the weapons both in their hands and in their heads and you know, embraced each other in a really beautiful way.
But that's a really important thing as well, because people just think automatically of the weapons, but it's not. It's what people thought mentally.
Well, that's so true, because, you know, you have people say, you know, but that whole period in the after the Good Friday Agreement, decommissioning and all the rest of it. I think somebody famously say, no, we can decommission, but you have to decommission my mind. You know what I mean? You have to give me a reason to decommission my mind. And believe me, Joe, and to all your listeners, so much great work has been done. And I lived in London for 10 years, as I say. I toured England, Scotland, Wales. I probably know Britain better than most British people, you know what I mean? And good people. And we're all intertwined. I mean, many people have got an Irish granda or something. You know, we're all intertwined, and there's more
connected.
More English voices over in Belfast and in Dublin and all the rest of it, you know. I just think the governments need to catch up a wee bit, as usual.
Let's reel us back to what we're here to talk about as well, which is your fabulous album, and I've had the opportunity, and I feel really privileged to have already looked a lot of the lyrics that involved with that. So everything that we've been talking about, or you've been talking about, I should say, as I did say, I should have said storyteller at the beginning there. all the layers of Joby are on this album. This is you, because you've got two homes there as well, because you also spend a lot of time in Denmark, because that's where you recorded the album, didn't you, Joby?
That's right. I actually live in Denmark.
Oh, you do now?
Yeah,
I didn't realise.
You know, I spend a bit of, obviously, time back home and everything, a family there too, but my home is here. I'm resident here in Denmark. Love Denmark. A lot of great jazz tradition here, and you know, that sort of stimulates my brain too, you know. So I'm very happy with my little son, Rory, and Sophie here. You know, so I recorded the album here with a load of young jazz heads and mixed it here up in Copenhagen. And I'm proud of the album. And there's a journey into the album. And I kept it nice and sweet. There's eight songs there. Put a lot of And they've recorded in different places, I have to say. You know, most of the album was recorded here, rather, but there was other songs recorded along the way. Mm. And I'm very proud of them. And, you know, there's a story with everyone, let's put it that way, you know. I'm going over to London. I'll be playing next month in London. I just don't have the dates off the top of my head, but I'm out there anyway.
So I'll give them a shout as soon as you throw them over to me, Joby, at that time, yeah. But definitely have to come and see you because, as I say, like the album itself, it's all layers of you from what I can read from the lyrics. I can't wait to actually hear the album. I really can't. So, yeah, I know it's that. I've only got 3 days to wait. I'm okay. Or 2 days now. But Joby, listen, so what's next for Joby? You're going to be doing some touring, yeah?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I've got a lot of dates coming up here, there and everywhere, but actual tour will be sort of February, March next year.
Right.
And I've got some Irish dates and we're trying to add on some English dates too, obviously. And yeah, just play on. And like as all, you know, all artists should never look back. You know, I only look forward. In fact, coming here today, doing it, I had to read my own bio and go, God, okay, because I knew it was 20 minutes or how long it was going to be. So I knew you were going to get into it a bit. So, but most artists, you know, I never look back. Mm. I just look forward. And that's it.
That's great advice, Joby, as well. And I asked you what song you'd like me to pick, because there's 9 gorgeous songs. We've already played Fallin', that's on our A-list already here at Phoenix FM. Which one did you choose and why did you choose it?
Well, it's a song called I Love You. It's the next single off the album. Everybody loves this song. My family, I have like a big extended Irish family. And, you know, I have to play it at all the weddings and all the rest. But so it has that. And it's a song sort of inspired by meeting Sophie a few years ago. And also, it's also inspired by a film with John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara, called The Quiet Man.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's an old movie. So it's a love song, and it's got some beautiful strings on there and stuff like that there. Yeah, the reason why I'd like you to play it is because I think it's just one of those songs. It's perfect for people who are falling in love and have fell in love and weddings or whatever else, you know, and it's one of those songs. I think it's some of my best work.
Wow. Okay. So here we go. And it is a sneak preview as well. So yes, because it's actually not out yet. So yes, I can't wait to play it now. Joby, listen again. Thank you so much. You can get Joby at jobyfox.com. It's as easy as that. It's all over the internet as well, so you can find him everywhere. Joby, it's been an absolute joy. I can't wait to come and see you. You're going to have to throw us the dates as well. We'll probably end up having to get a big coach from Essex, I reckon, to come out and see you.
That'd be brilliant. It's my pleasure, Joe, and I mean that sincerely. It is my pleasure. I love your voice, by the way. I just have to say, I love your voice.
You too. There we go. Mutual love there, Joby.
Yeah. Love your voice.
There we go. Joby, again, thanks so much for coming on to Drive here on Phoenix FM. And yeah, I can't wait until the album comes out. We've only got a couple of days, but here is. Do you know what? There's no one better to introduce the song than yourself, Joby. Go for it.
Here it is. I Love You, Joby Fox.
Cheers, Joby.
Oh, thank you.
Here I am in the morning of a day to come.